When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's January the 8th, 2004, in Orange County, Southern California. The sun is setting behind the picturesque hills of the Whiting Ranch Wilderness Park. It's a dry, mild evening, around 4:45 p.m. A cool wind shakes the cacti and whips up dust on arid tracks. Somewhere in this maze of winding canyons and hillscapes lies 30-year-old Ann Yella. She's unconscious, unmoving. Nearby, Anne's mountain bike lies on its side. She's still in her cycling gear. It's obvious she's come flying off during a ride. But this is no ordinary cycling accident. Anne's eyelids flutter, and she comes to, groggy and disorientated. How did she get here? Her vision focuses, and she starts to get her bearings. She sees a familiar face standing over her, a friend, Debbie. But her expression provides no comfort to Anne. Debbie appears in shock, disheveled, trembling. Fleeting images start coming back. The bike trail, the body blow, the gruesome life and death struggle on the edge of a ravine. Anne tries to take a breath. Something's wrong. Her windpipe is blocked. A dull, metallic taste fills her mouth.
I couldn't get any air. I'm gasping and I just feel almost like I'm underwater. And then I understand that I'm probably swallowing blood from my injuries. So I try to get myself upright. Debbie can see that I'm trying to sit up. She helps me up.
Anne coughs up the blood, filling her throat. She manages to clear her airway and gulps in oxygen. She can breathe again, but her injuries are devastating. Deep lacerations cover her face.
I'm sitting, I'm trying to catch my breath, trying to stay calm, and I can feel my cheek hanging down like a big, like a steak. So I was holding it up to my face.
And the danger is far from over. What caused Anne's injuries remains a threat to her. If she can't get out of these hills fast, things could get even worse. Ever wondered what you would do when disaster strikes? If your life depended on your next decision, could you make the right choice? Welcome to Real Survival Stories. These are the astonishing tales of ordinary people thrown into extraordinary situations, people suddenly forced to fight for their lives. In this episode, we meet personal trainer, former Marine, and avid mountain biker, Anne Yella. A competitive rider, Anne loves nothing more than pushing herself to the limit. But in January 2004, when she goes for a quick sunset spin in the foothills of Southern California, she has no idea of the terrifying fate that awaits her.
I did come to the realization that this is the end of my life. I remember thinking, this must be where the tunnel of light thing happens, or the real of your life. I just had that sense of calm. At that point, I was 100% convinced that I would not be waking up.
I'm John Hopkins from Noiser. This is Real Survival Stories. It's 4 p.m. on Thursday, January the 8th, 2004. The waning sun adds a purple tinge to the skies over Orange County, Southern California. In Whiting Ranch Wilderness Park, trees and cacti cast long shadows over the dry foothills. Families gather to watch the sunset over the pink sandstone walls of Red Rock Canyon. The 2,500-acre park is a glorious collection of peaks, valleys, ravines, and grasslands. Hikers and horseback riders trot along dirt tracks which weave through the scenery. But not everyone is content to bask in the tranquility. Anne Yeller is here to push herself, to test her strength and endurance. Standing up on the pedals of a mountain bike, she cycles hard up the steep incline to the top of Cactus Hill. Her reward for this effort will be a white-knuckle thrill ride down the other side, a plunging track dotted with rocks that would strike fear into many bikers. But not Anne. For the sporty ex-Marine, this is exactly what she craves, the perfect escape from the urban sprawl of Los Angeles.
The thing I loved about mountain biking, especially in Southern California, is the pace of Southern California is very fast. There's traffic on the freeway. You know, you're dealing with a very high stress kind of environment. And yet we have all of these wonderful wilderness parks set aside within Orange County where you can go there and within a couple of minutes on your ride, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. So it is completely an escape from the hustle and bustle and the fast pace of life.
Today, Anne is cycling in the foothills of the Santa Ana Mountains, just east of Orange County. It's a quick end of the day ride, just to clear her head, to get the blood pumping.
I had just gotten back into town. I was visiting family in Minneapolis area and hadn't been riding for a couple of weeks. So my goal on this particular day was just to do a quick local ride. If I went to this particular park, Whiting Ranch, you know, a loop might be 40, 45 minutes just to kind of get my legs back, you know, after being on vacation. I had run to the grocery store, had a couple bags of groceries, literally ran in the house, put away the refrigerated stuff, left the other stuff on the counter thinking I'll be right back, you know, in an hour, no big deal.
Anne knows the area well. She comes to Whiting Ranch often. In fact, she takes her mountain bike out at every possible opportunity. She's always enjoyed being fit and active, but biking is more than that. Since moving to California, the sport has taken over her life.
When I had gotten out of the Marine Corps, I started work as a personal trainer. I was honestly so obsessed with mountain biking during this time of my life, even though as a trainer, I'm teaching people how to work out in the gym. I never worked out in the gym. I actually stopped lifting weights completely because all I wanted to do was ride.
Biking has had a huge influence on Anne, physically, mentally, and even romantically. It's through riding that she met her husband, James. And it's how she's made many of her best friends, including the woman now cycling behind her, Debbie Nichols, a fellow trail angel.
I was in a women's mountain biking group called Trail Angels. My goal was to find a few people who I could ride with who were not only my level or similar level, but didn't like to talk. As you can imagine, a women's mountain biking group, there's a lot of talking. I'm not one to kind of chit chat during the ride because my goal really was to get better, to get faster.
When Anne wants to test herself, Debbie is who she calls. Debbie's 18 years older than Anne, a mother and a grandmother, but she's as fast as anyone on two wheels. They're kindred spirits, both highly competitive. They've managed the tough climb on the top of Cactus Hill. Anne glances over her shoulder, checking her friend is ready. They're just about to start their downhill run when two male riders zip past, spraying them in a light cloud of dust. Anne flashes Debbie a smile before taking off in pursuit.
I see two guys go down Cactus. So I said to Debbie, you know, are you ready? Let's go. And I do tend to kind of use other people as rabbits to chase. So if it's a trail I'm familiar with and I see someone go out ahead, I'm just going to see if I can catch them by the bottom, just for the fun of it. Nothing, you know, it's not really a competition between me and them. It's just me versus me.
Anne tightens her grip on the handlebars and expertly guides her front wheel down the track. The slope becomes steeper and she picks up speed. Despite knowing the trail well, there's no space for complacency. If she fails to spot a pothole or takes a sharp bend too quickly, she could be thrown into the spiny cacti which line the banks. Or worse still, she could tumble into the ravine below. But it's all part of the fun.
We tend to go fast because I know every single turn, every rock, every, you know, bunch of cactus or whatever. I kind of believe that if I get injured mountain biking, it's usually my fault. So it's part of what I liked about mountain biking, that to a degree, I'm in control of how fast I take the trail or what kind of risks I put myself in.
Anne is flying now, skillfully maneuvering her juddering tires over the rough track. The sound of her approach sends a sleepy snake darting into the undergrowth. A reminder that the terrain isn't the only danger out here. There are numerous reptiles, spiders, and scorpions you'd rather avoid. But Anne's main concern is actually deer. Up here, they've been known to suddenly leap onto the paths. Not something you want to happen during a high-speed descent. And there are also coyotes and even cougars, but you rarely see them near hiking trails.
We're aware that there are mountain lion sightings. I'd never heard of interactions, though, with people. The Department of Fish and Game and OC Parks seemed like they were really on top of it. It was more, oh, cool, the opportunity to see wildlife that you wouldn't see at your house was enticing to me as an animal lover.
A bigger threat to Anne than the wildlife is probably a collision with another person. But as she zips down the trail, adrenaline pumping, she's focused. Her eyes scan the track ahead. She listens closely to the buzz of her tires and the crunch of gravel. She takes another corner at speed. Her fingers instinctively grip the brakes, squeezing hard. Her wheels lock and skid as Anne tries to avoid a head-on crash. Which she does, just. She slows down to take in the strange sight in front of her.
I saw a man standing on the edge of the trail. He was straddling his own bike, and then there was a bike leaned up against some bushes. And I slowed down because I would have hit him coming at the speed I was going.
One man, two bikes. As Anne approaches, she instinctively looks around for the second rider, half expecting to see him returning from the bushes.
I honestly thought this was the two guys who had just gone down the trail. It's very wide open. It's like a plateau. There's no trees. So if you were going to go to the bathroom, you're probably going to go down the trail a little bit. And I just said, is everything okay? As I'm rolling past him. And he said, I found this abandoned bike.
An abandoned bike? It all seems pretty unlikely. Anne assumes the guy is just joking around. It wouldn't be the first time.
As a female mountain biker in a very male-dominated sport, we come across that quite a bit where people will just try to make random small talk. So I really thought nothing of it. I didn't take him seriously, and I continued on.
With Debbie hot on her heels, there's no time to hang about. Anne gives the man a smile and a shrug before pedaling off. Little does she know, the missing rider is a sign of things to come. In just a few minutes, disaster will strike, and it will be her bike that is found lying, abandoned, on the side of the trail. The evening is closing in. Anne is up on her pedals and cycling hard. Before long, she's re-established her lead ahead of Debbie. A minute or so later, she rounds another corner and reaches a small plateau. She can't help taking in the view before her. The tree-lined hills, the peaks of red rock shimmering in the setting sunlight, the vast sky. High above, a hawk glides. Its call echoes around the valley. Anne coasts a little, absorbing the moment. But then, everything suddenly changes. To her right, out of the corner of her eye, Anne senses movement in the scrub.
All I could tell was that it was an animal. I could see it was like a reddish-brown fur, and it was coming at me very quickly. My first assumption was that it was a deer. I had been in that same situation before on a single track with very high brush, and a deer bounded across the trail right in front of me and almost hit me accidentally, of course. So I just assumed this is what's happening.
Before she has time to react, the creature explodes out of the brush. A flash of color, a crushing impact, and Anne is sent flying through the air.
I was hit and just, I mean, I've never been hit by a car, but I would imagine that's what it feels like. It was such a powerful hit. It knocked me off my bike and straight to the ground. So just this powerful impact that completely knocked the wind out of my lungs. I'm clipped into my pedals. I instantly pop out of the pedals and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this isn't a deer, obviously. And I knew right away the only thing that is capable of this is a mountain lion.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Hi, listeners. If you have an amazing survival story of your own that you'd like to put forward for the show, let us know. Drop us an email at support@noiser.com. That's support@noiser.com. Anne lies on her front, stunned and wheezing, her face pressed into the earth. On top of her, pinning her down, is a snarling 130-pound mountain lion. Its taut, muscular frame ripples beneath matted, tawny fur. Globs of saliva coat its muzzle. Anne is helpless as the cougar sinks its 1.5-inch claws deep into her back. Out of the corner of her eye, she can see rows of pointed teeth coming towards her.
His claws are dug into each of my shoulders, and he's trying to clamp on the back of my neck. That's how they would kill their typical prey, biting the back of the neck and severing the spinal cord to paralyze the animal. And my instinct was, I cried out, Jesus help me. I'm thinking, this is absolutely insane. And I just kept saying in my head, this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable.
The mountain lion is trying to get at Anne's neck, but the sound of teeth clashing on plastic tells her that her bike helmet is protecting her, for now. She takes her chance to fight back.
I'm trying to use my right hand and punch around my head to the lion's face, but it did nothing. There was no change in the amount of pressure I felt.
Anne can feel a dull, tugging sensation at the base of her skull. Then she realizes the lion is dragging her, head first, off the trail and down into the ravine. But just then, over the snarling and gnashing of teeth, she hears Debbie.
Debbie had come down the trail And she just sees this mountain lion on top of me and hears me screaming bloody murder. She jumps into action. So she takes her bike, she jumps off her bike and throws it as far as she can, trying to hit the lion to scare him, to get him to let go. Again, doesn't faze him. So she grabs onto my left ankle and calf, and just this tug of war ensues between Debbie and the mountain lion. Mountain lion is easily pulling both of us, dragging us through that scrub brush down into the ravine, and Debbie is screaming for help.
Cougars are incredibly strong and agile hunters. They can take down and carry animals far larger than themselves. Without much effort, the mountain lion drags Anne and Debbie 10 feet down the slope, then 20 feet, 30 feet, deeper into the brush. During the frenzy, time seems to slow down.
On one hand, I'm just thinking, this is unbelievable. This is unbelievable, unreal. I can't believe this. Then I'm thinking, as the lion is holding on to me, did Debbie just say the F word? I've never heard her swear before. And then I'm thinking, you know, something else. And just the fact that I can have these three separate trains of thought all going in the middle of this attack, to me, is wild. Just how the brain is trying to manage the situation. The thing I remember most clearly is that when he bit down on my face, it was like a hot knife through butter. You kind of envision, you know, the tissues of your face, like, being connected to the skull pretty well, but it just peeled away like nothing. And I just remember being aware of how easily he did that.
Despite the terror, Anne has the clarity of thought to consider the horrific damage those teeth are doing to her, and how that might impact her life, should she survive.
I think part of it is my environment. Living in Southern California, everyone here is nipped and tucked to the nth degree. I work as a personal trainer. People hire me based on my looks, whether they realize it or not. But in that moment, I just remember thinking, I don't know if I want to live. I don't know if I can deal with what just happened and going forward from that. And then I thought of my husband. We had been married just under 3 years at that point, and he's my best friend, and we did everything together. And I just thought he would want me to fight. He would want me to fight. So even though I wasn't sure how I would move forward from that injury, I knew that I had to at least try my best to get out of that situation.
Anne balls her fists again and keeps throwing wild punches. Her knuckles connect with teeth and fur and skull. During the fight, she even tries to use something James taught her. It could be the difference between life and death.
My husband is a martial arts instructor. I went to class from when we were dating through when we were married, and I took his classes. And one of the things they teach you, if someone's trying to choke you out, is you protect your neck by closing off the chin to the collarbone and trying to keep them from being able to get in there to get that choke. So that was what I tried to do to try to protect my neck from the lion, but it didn't work. I just can't even describe the amount of power that cat had. I'm literally nothing to that animal, and that's what it felt like. He was so completely overpowering.
Suddenly, Anne is flipped onto her back and is face to face with a mountain lion. The cat's teeth sink into the flesh under her chin. As her vision blurs, the last thing she sees is Debbie desperately shouting, stubbornly holding onto her, refusing to let her go.
I knew this is it. I could feel I can't get any more air. I'm about to pass out. And I'm just coming to the realization that this is how my life is going to end. I just couldn't believe that this had happened to me. I had this very intense sense of calm. I remember thinking, this must be where the tunnel of light thing happens, or the reel of your life, that movie playing back. And I was sorely disappointed that none of that happened, and I blacked out. At that point, I was 100% convinced that I would not be waking up.
It's around 4:45 p.m. Anne slowly opens her eyes and comes to. It's unclear how long she's been out for. As her vision clears, it takes her a second to recognize Debbie standing over her. A little further up the slope, Anne can now see a group of worried-looking male bikers. One of them is talking frantically on the phone. As she takes in the scene around her, it all starts coming back. The sudden attack, the fight, the mountain lion.
I obviously didn't realize when I came to what had happened. All I know was the lion was gone, at least temporarily, and I couldn't believe that I was alive.
Somehow, she has survived. How? What happened? But there's no time to answer these questions. Her fight for survival is far from over.
I noticed that I couldn't get any air. I'm gasping, and I just feel almost like I'm underwater. And then I understand that I'm probably swallowing blood from my injuries. So I try to get myself upright. Debbie can see that I'm trying to sit up. She helps me up, take my helmet off, because I felt like everything was so restrictive. I just needed to get air. You know, like, I'm alive. Let's figure this out.
She coughs and splutters, finally managing to clear her airway. She takes a deep breath. The men hurry down. They help Debbie carry Anne up the embankment and back onto the trail. They all look at her injuries in horror. The lion's fangs and claws have punctured deep into her back and neck. Any of these wounds could be life-threatening. Her left cheek is flapping loose from her face. One of the men passes her a t-shirt to soak up the blood, now pouring from the countless lacerations. Another tells her that help is on the way. She just needs to hang on. There's not much more any of them can do now. But as it turns out, these men have done a lot for her already, along with Debbie, of course. Thanks to them, just at the fatal moment, the attack was interrupted.
So, honestly, it's a total miracle that I'm still alive, but it's only because of those people who jumped in. Debbie screaming brought the other mountain bikers to the area. So they start picking up softball-sized rocks and throwing them in our direction. One of the guys threw a rock that hit the lion. The first rock hit the lion in the hindquarters, and then he hit him right in the head, and the lion actually released his grip.
Under this barrage of rocks, the lion retreated down into the ravine. The timing of their intervention is the first of several small miracles. In this remote location, it's usually impossible to get a phone signal. But in a huge stroke of luck, one of Anne's rescuers has managed to get a call out to 911. Just as incredibly, it only takes 19 minutes for a team of fire department paramedics to arrive on the scene. They're soon followed by the distant hum of a helicopter. Crucially, Anne now has professionals tending to her, inspecting her wounds. But one of the paramedics is clearly highly agitated by the situation. His eyes nervously dart back and forth. His trembling hands fumble with the medical kit.
One of the firefighter paramedics crouched down right in front of me and was talking to me, and he was trying to start an IV. And I remember watching his hands as he's trying to start this IV, and his hands are shaking so badly. And I just thought, I must look a lot worse than I think I look, because he is seriously rattled. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, considering this is what he does for a living, I thought, oh my gosh, maybe I'm a lot worse off than I thought.
But it's not Anne's injuries that have the firefighter quivering. It's the fact that just 20 feet away, crouching in the scrub, is the mountain lion, waiting for another chance to finish what it started.
And here this paramedic is crouched down with his back to the lion, basically, as he's trying to start an IV. So the firefighter knew that. I didn't know that. So needless to say, it was a very high stress situation for everyone.
They need to move quickly. The IV is eventually administered, and Anne is carefully placed onto a stretcher. She's carried up the trail to a spot where the helicopter can land. Before long, Anne is being loaded inside. The door is slammed shut, and the rotors power up. It's early evening. Thanks to the helicopter, the 10-mile journey from Whiting Ranch to Mission Viejo Hospital is over in a flash. But the ordeal isn't over. Anne's still in a lot of trouble.
As soon as they rolled me into the ER, they're working to assess my injuries. I didn't know at the time that the doctor who was in the ER that night, he's seen a lot. It's the highest level trauma hospital in our area. He said that my injuries were the worst he had ever seen.
Anne is rushed through the hospital. X-rays and CT scans are needed to assess the extent of the damage. The injuries could easily have been fatal, but remarkably, she seems to have avoided the worst.
I had 20 penetrating bite wounds to my neck, mostly in the front, where the cat was readjusting its grip. And the otolaryngologist, or ENT, said that he oftentimes would use his finger to probe depths of wounds to see how severe they were. And he stuck his finger into one of the neck wounds, and it went all the way to his highest knuckle, which was wild to me. By some miracle, none of those fangs hit my carotid artery, jugular vein, voice box. I mean, they were within millimeters. So it was just incredible with how much is going on in the neck that I ended up surviving that.
Anne will require extensive surgery. While she waits, nurses provide her with painkillers and swaddle her with blankets. Later that evening, her husband, James, arrives at the hospital. The shock's almost too much for him.
I mean, he is like the strongest person I know, so mentally tough. And I mean, obviously he is in disbelief, and he started calling people, calling his grandma, calling my parents. And when his grandma picked up, she had no idea who she was talking to. He was so frantic and stressed, she couldn't recognize who this was.
Ironically, it's Anne who's calm.
As soon as James got there, I asked him, oh, you have to call work. Let them know I'm not going to be there tomorrow. You know, again, who cares? Little did I know, they all saw it on the news later that night anyway. But yeah, I'm very much a check things off kind of person in those situations.
The truth is, the trauma is yet to properly sink in. In the days to come, following her surgery, Anne will have time to reflect on it all and consider what it means for her life going forwards. And yet, more revelations about what really happened that day are still to come. It's Friday morning, the day after her surgery. A nurse comes to check on Anne. During the examination, she asks the nurse for a favor.
I remember asking her if I could see a mirror. And I'm not sure what most nurses' responses would be, but she went and got a compact out of her purse and handed it to me. And honestly, I just kind of wanted to see where I'm at, like, with this situation. And I just couldn't believe, we look in the mirror, we expect to see a certain thing. Our brain expects to see a certain thing. And I just was in shock at what I was looking at.
Anne hands the compact mirror back to the nurse. It's the first time she's seen the true extent of the damage. But she's determined to find the positives. So later, she asks to see photos from when she first arrived at the hospital. She wants to see how bad she looked before the operation.
So he showed me the pictures and I just, yeah, it was mind blowing to me. But the way my brain works, I am an optimist and I just thought, this is what it looked like before. It already looks better. And then we're on the road to better, like not letting myself wallow in the misery of the loss of my looks or whatever, just really thinking forward and thinking of how do we get to the next step of recovery. It's just where my brain was.
Perhaps Anne is right to be upbeat. The surgery couldn't have gone much better. With her left cheek almost completely severed, the doctors had a hell of a job on their hands.
One of the major issues with my facial injuries were that I had two branches of this facial nerve that had been severed in the process, which were controlling motor function of muscles of my face. So Dr. Nolan spent a lot of time trying to find those nerve endings to see if he could reattach them. It's like a needle in a haystack. I mean, nerves are very, very tiny. But he was able to find them and reconnect them, which was another miracle in my mind.
Whatever way you look at it, Anne has been extremely lucky. But as it turns out, there was someone else cycling in Whiting Ranch yesterday who wasn't so fortunate. Anne and James watch in shock as local news channels report on a mountain lion attack. Only it's not Anne who's the subject of the stories. The abandoned bike, the one she had pedaled past just moments before she was attacked. It seems the owner was a 35-year-old man called Mark Reynolds, a competitive rider out on his own.
As far as I know, there was no real defensive wounds. So, they ambush from behind. That's most likely what happened. They're so quick and efficient. I think, unfortunately, Mark is an example of just how effective these cats are at what they do. And I just don't think that most people would have any chance in that situation. Obviously, normally humans are not normal prey for mountain lions, but it did likely play into the reasons I was attacked.
There are thought to be around 4,000 mountain lions in California. Over the past century, there have been only around 20 confirmed attacks recorded in the state. But on occasion, this can, of course, lead to tragedy. As recently as March 2024, a 21-year-old man was attacked and killed by a mountain lion in Georgetown, Northern California. Experts note that almost all cougar attacks have come since the 1980s. As the creep of urban development has brought more and more people into areas of wilderness. Statistically, hikers are more likely to be struck by lightning. But it's still a risk outdoor enthusiasts need to be aware of. For Mark Reynolds, the risk proved fatal.
Who knows why that cat considered Mark prey? I don't know, but we can play a role in that. So that's a big issue for me. We need to be responsible with our use of wilderness areas, that we're making sure to allow them to stay wild.
The big difference for Anne was that she wasn't alone that day. Along with the other mountain bikers who came to her aid, she was with a friend who was willing to risk her own life.
The only reason I'm alive is because of the role Debbie played and the role the other mountain bikers who were there played. By myself, I would have died. 100%. 100%. I have zero doubts about that. Debbie being right there, the cat, all he would have had to do is one swipe and she'd be down. I'll always love her. And I think most people, 99.9% of people, would not do what she did. And that's not something that I'll ever forget. I owe my life to her, 100%.
In the coming weeks, family and friends visit Anne in hospital while she recovers. Throughout, her husband James's support is unwavering. Anne will never look the same again. Some might have a hard time accepting a change to their partner's looks, but not James.
Because of the fact that this area is so focused on looks. I mean, he's a former model. He's a good-looking guy. So I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that is a challenge. But he's an extremely loyal person. So there was no point at which I thought he's not going to stick with me. I knew he would because of how he's wired, which I am extremely thankful for.
In the months following the attack, Anne is highly self-conscious. She undergoes more facial reconstruction surgery. Each procedure helps somewhat, but the recovery from every one is long and painful. They're also expensive. To help cover the mounting costs of their medical insurance, Anne reluctantly agrees to a TV interview. She's taken aback by the flood of positive feedback she receives from viewers. Not long after, she gives her first public talk on the subject of survival. It's the first of many she will deliver as part of her new life as a motivational speaker. Anne eventually returns to mountain biking and even to flying down Cactus Hill. She continues to live an active life with James and their daughter, Elsa. And somewhere along the way, Anne finds peace with what happened, deciding not to have any more surgery to alter her appearance.
There's not one day of my life that I am not aware of my facial injuries. It's always in the back of my mind. But I've learned to live with it. I know a lot of people say, oh, if I could go back, I wouldn't change a thing. I would. I would skip that ride. But I wouldn't have wanted to miss out on this, what I kind of refer to as my second round of life, because there's so much good that has come into my life since this. I can't imagine that having been the last day.
In the next episode, we meet Jean Silverwood. In 2005, she and her family are in the middle of a round-the-world sailing trip when a freak collision leaves them marooned on a coral reef. They're in the remote waters of French Polynesia in the dark. Jean will find herself scrambling to keep her boat and her family from being ripped apart at the seams. That's next time on Real Survival Stories. Listen to Jean's story right now without waiting a week with Noiser Plus.